David, thank you so much for being here. We're so blessed, so excited to learn from you and to have a conversation with you for the next little bit. I understand that you have a presentation, but thank you so much for being here, everybody.
I appreciate it. And thank you for your time. I thought I'd just give a quick setting of the stage and something to think about. And then the majority of it is not me talking to you, but most importantly, listening for what's important to you and hopefully facilitating the advice, wisdom, and faith that's necessary to shorten the distance of resistance that most of us are creating in our own lives. My journey is one of three different worlds. The first world is the one I was born into, a world of scarcity, of a world of not enough, where I always felt like a victim because of my financial status. I had a single mom who raised me, six kids, five boys and one girl. She worked two jobs, one as a second grade teacher, packed our dinners in a paper bag and drove us around in a Country Squire station wagon to fill up turnstiles at convenience stores with greeting cards just so we could eat. Sometimes my mom, with her understanding of scarcity and still being completely abundant, I remember my mom actually buying food with food stamps and buying pencils as well for second grade class because the school didn't supply those at the time. It's a nuance of an infinite loop of giving in which I've learned to what abundance is. I worked really hard. I had a philosophy that I was going to learn to love what other people didn't like or love. I was going to learn to love what I didn't like or love. And I was going to learn to believe in myself in the divine direction of what I wanted for myself, not what other people wanted, what was missing, or what I didn't have. And that's a lot of where people create void shortages and obstacles in their life is by focusing in on what other people want, what's missing, and what they don't have. In my life, the only thing that was missing as a child was finance. Every problem or struggle or pain seemed to be relative to money. And so therefore, as a young person, I felt that the only way to resolve infinite happiness and abundance was to be rich, buy my mom a house and a car, be able and well prepared when financial struggles occurred. And so I thought the best mechanism to do that was to be a professional athlete. Although my genetic and energetic inheritance didn't provide me a very high basement when it came to being a professional athlete. Although I had the desire, the delta to be one, I capped out in college. I played college football, and that's where my very first play I realized when I got ran over by Christian Okoye, who's known as the Nigerian Nightmare, was the AFC Player of the Year, that maybe I should pursue my mom's advice, which was doctor, lawyer, or failure. And so I was pre-med. And after the first season of football in college, I visited my brother, who was a doctor, and looked around the hospital very quickly. He could see on my face something was wrong. He asked me, "What's the matter?" And that's when I got the best piece of advice, I think, of my entire entrepreneurial journey, as well as my own perspective. Told my brother I hated hospitals, and he almost fell over. He said, "You're pre-med and you want to be a doctor, but you hate hospitals. You know you have to be in a hospital to be a doctor." And I said, no, I was 18 years old. I'm going to be a sports doctor. I'll be in sidelines and locker rooms. I'm not going to be in a hospital." And he told me at that time this great advice that I use almost after every one of my shows. He said, "David, you need to be more interested than interesting." And that's why the majority of what I do today is take Q&A. I'm one of the top hot seat coaches, ability to answer questions on the fly, any questions, personal or professional, by being more interested than interesting. In that measure, I quickly decided to be a lawyer, went to Tulane University Law School, became a maritime litigator because they made the most money. It was really simple. I was more interested than interesting. I got accepted to some really prestigious schools, from Georgetown to USC to others. But Tulane was the top maritime law school in the country, and oil and gas litigators made the most money out of law school. And I wanted to make a lot of money to resolve this abundance in my life. And ironically, studying maritime law led me to the internet. I had a choice when I got out of law school to get out of the world of not enough, to stop being a financial victim, to understand that trade or negotiation of the more you give, the more you receive. I put in my time and I got offered not only a $150,000 a year job in 1992 litigating for an oil and gas company, but I got offered a $250,000 sales job in the internet selling legal research online for West Publishing for something called Westlaw. Despite my mom telling me the internet was a fad, despite my mom and her friends telling me nobody would ever use the internet, and even despite Justice Scalia, in a conversation I was blessed to have, a Supreme Court justice telling me nobody will ever do research on a computer, you need books, I took the job to sell legal research online. My first 9 months made over $1 million. After 3 years, we exited for $3.4 billion, that's with a B, in 1995. So now I left the world of not enough and entered this world that a lot of people live in called the world of just enough. It's a false facade of humanitarian philanthropy and optimism. The more I give, the more I receive. It's a trade, it's a negotiation. And it's true, the more you give, the more you will receive, but they don't teach us the whole equation. They don't teach us the whole lesson. And so as I moved on in my career to the Silicon Valley, raising hundreds of millions of dollars in the middleware space, and then eventually in 1999, at the age of 31, married to my dream girl, worth over $100 million, ran the data division for Samsung with the world's first convergence device called a Windows CE. There's no such thing as Apple. It was a Windows CE device. I lied in my Rancho Santa Fe home, empty and without definite purpose. And I then started to surround myself with the wrong people and the wrong ideas. And eventually, as I got hired at Lee Steinberg, as you mentioned, the Jerry Maguire sports agency, the most notable sports agency representing the most players and money at the time, I hit rock bottom. I had lost the values that I grew up with, and my wife, thank goodness, saved my life. And 2 years before I lost everything and went bankrupt, my wife told me to take stock in who I was and what I wanted to become, and she was leaving me. She told me she wasn't going to wait around with my three healthy, beautiful daughters that were under the age of 10 to watch me destroy everything that I had created, that we had created. And so I went on a journey to look at these values and practices, because it was good behaviors that got me to where I wanted to be or better. Good behaviors defined by where I wanted to be or better, and bad behaviors that were interfering with it. And those were personal to me. My good behaviors may be your bad behaviors, and your bad behavior may be my good behavior, depending on you, where you want to be and where I want to be. And so over the last 18 years, with all of the content that I've created, in person, on the phone, via email, traditional media, social media, I've been able to start my mission after losing over $100 million to empower people with values, gratitude, empathy, accountability, and effective communication to utilize daily practices of their own behaviors in a divine direction, understanding the relationship to circumstance, and knowing that the only limitation that all of us have is the meaning we give the past, the failures, the setbacks, the defining moments, the historical relevances of our past, the meaning we give it will limit our own self-image. And God knows we will never overachieve our own self-image, our own imagination. And so creating five daily practices and utilizing four key values, I've been able to make back all of my money and more in a mission. And the commissions follow. And so I utilize every single day of my life to do these types of things to help people like you. I've created free Friday trainings for over 26 years. I have a private networking group that we meet every day. I give access every day to me for advice and introductions and to the community of people. I give away my books. So I encourage you to email me. I'll change my thing up there to david@dmeltzer.com. So you can go ahead and email me. I will sign a book, send it to you, anyone in this community, pay for shipping, pay for the book of these values and daily practices that we're going to talk about today. That's david@dmeltzer.com. Just to go through the five daily practices for the last 6 minutes. By the way, I'm a time freak, so you'll notice very timely. They forgot time is a love language in the book, so it should be included. Time is absolutely my love language. So let's go through the five daily practices, and then I'm happy to answer any questions. The biggest problem that most people have is they don't know what they want, personally, experientially, giving and receiving, because they don't understand circumstances of the day, and they're seeking something that will never happen, which is balance. I want you to think about each day in two different time zones, one being non-negotiable time, and 90% of the exponentiality of success and outcomes in people's lives come from what they're committed to doing and enjoying doing every single day. So I assign time to what I want each day with my non-negotiable behaviors, a minimum of 7 hours on my sleep. I've had a sleep coach for 18 years. The fastest way to get to where you want to be, you'll find, is to find someone that's an expert and ask them for directions. You don't have to pay the dummy tax. It's, by the way, the most expensive tax. So if you're moving to some state because of taxes, don't be a fool. That's not a reason to move. Family's a reason. Weather's a reason. Activities are reasons. Taxes is not a reason to move, because the dummy tax will cost you everything you've ever made and everything you will ever make. And so understanding your non-negotiable behavior, a minimum of 7 hours on sleep, a minimum of an hour, and I repeat, minimum. That doesn't mean according to the circumstances of each day, it may be more. A minimum of an hour with my health, a minimum of time with my family, a minimum of time with my faith, a minimum of time with my finance, a minimum amount of time studying time, a minimum amount of time studying relativity, association, and the context of feeding and bleeding of the value of the relativity and association that I give the people, places, things, circumstances, and events. When you establish your non-negotiables, you establish why people get an A in Spanish. What do I mean by that? Has anyone ever met a kid who studies 15 minutes of Spanish every day and doesn't get an A? Impossible. I know a ton of kids that study 15 hours on the weekend before a test and don't get A's, but I know nobody. And so when we start to realize the physics, the energy of time, 2 minutes a day of consistent, persistent pursuit in the divine direction, the behaviors that get you to where you want to be or better, 2 minutes a day is equal to 2 hours on a Saturday. And so we're going to use non-negotiable behavior to enjoy what we don't like or don't love, enjoy what other people don't like and don't love, stay consistent every day and persistent without quit in the pursuit of where we want to be, our divine direction, which translates divine detours as well into divine time. And when we do that, we will receive the acceleration, aggregation, and compounding of outcomes. 90% of our outcomes are from our non-negotiables, because life tells you all its secrets and gives you its cheat codes when you enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of your potential. The second daily practice, know your who. Now, the other behaviors are negotiable, obviously, and it's by the circumstances of each day. And we then utilize the other 13 or 14 hours during the day to make it negotiable behavior according to the circumstances of the reality of the day. Then number two, know your who. Know who you can help get to where they want to be or better, and know who already is where you want to be or better, and ask them for directions. This will create the easiest route to get to where you want to be. Helping other people get to where they want to be, that's why I created that private networking group, because I want that nuance of knowing your who and making an easy way to know your who. The third daily practice is know your how. Knowing your how involves the negotiable behaviors after you put in the non-negotiable behaviors to be more productive, more accessible, and more gracious. See, God's granted all of us only one certainty outside of what exists inside of us. Remember, you're limited by the meaning you give everything, and that exists inside of you, not inside of me. You're limited by the meaning of the past, setbacks, failures, mistakes, void, shortages, and obstacles. Your certainty exists within you. There's only one certainty outside of you, and that's the 24-hour guarantee. God has guaranteed all of us 24 hours a day, every day of our lives, except for the last day. He guarantees only seconds, minutes, or hours. That's it. every other day, we can rely on a certainty of 24 hours, and we all can use that as a dependent variable for the negotiable behaviors in the circumstances. So we separate our activities each day by non-negotiable and negotiable, planned and unplanned, paid for and unpaid for, and sleep. And when we do that, we now create the how. That's how we're going to get it done. The fourth daily practice is know your now. You see, 100% of the things you do now get done. 100% of the things you do next get done too. It's an automatic guarantee. But most importantly, it's the antidote what troubles most entrepreneurs, feeling overwhelmed and procrastination. You realize it's impossible to feel overwhelmed if you know your now and know your next. If you're doing it now and doing it next, you won't feel overwhelmed. You'll just feel abundant in the world of more than enough, not the world of victimization of happening to you or for you in a negotiation, but a world of infinite abundance. By knowing your now and knowing your next, doing it now and doing it next, you will be able to effectuate a reality, a materialization, and a monetization by prioritizing your behaviors according to the circumstances of the day, the meaning of the past, and your divine direction, your trajectory, and where you think you want to be or better. And then finally, as we come upon the 20-minute mark, before we start taking questions, the last thing I want you to do in the daily practice is to think about, ask questions about, stop searching for your why. When you know your what, it's a possibility. When you know your who, it's a probability. When you know your how, it's a perspective. And when you know your now, it's the reality. So you already know your why. Your why is something bigger than you. It's omniscient and all-knowing. It's all-powerful. It's regardless of your dogmatic religions, philosophies, principles, and theories, regardless of it, your why is that you're part of an infinite, abundant, unified system of thought, an omniscient, all-powerful source that loves you, protects you, promotes you, and perfects you more than your mom. So if all of you are religious out there and you're like, Dave, do you believe in Jesus Christ? I will ask you one question. Is Jesus Christ bigger than me and loves me more than my mom? And if the answer is yes, then I believe in Jesus Christ and Buddha, Muhammad, Joseph Smith, all of the other great sources out there that make me a greater resource for all of you. And so I apply my why and I apply it with wisdom and faith to shorten the distance of resistance between me and the all-knowing and all-powerful that I'm part of. And that's within the context of a universe of more than enough of everything for everyone. So we don't have to live as victims. Nothing's happening to you. Stop trading and negotiating. The more you give, the more you receive in a world that is still scarce, that there's only just enough for me. Not only should you give more, elevate your awareness through the values of gratitude, forgiveness, and accountability to live in spirit, effectively communicate, to understand all that we're given. Because if you give more, you're given more. And that's the missing thing they're not teaching us. Elevate your awareness. Don't feel punished just because there's no evidence or evidence is contrary to where you think you want to be. You still can find all that you're given. When I lost everything, over $100 million, and had to go tell my mom that not only I lost everything, but I lost her home, which was the only reason I wanted to be rich, it took me more than just minutes and moments not to feel punished. I actually told my mom I felt punished. I told her I didn't believe in God. And she smirked at me and said, oh, son, you believe in God. You just believe in the wrong God. On that day, I realized the more I give, the more I'm given. The more I'm given, the more I receive. And if I don't receive more than I give, I'm going to end up at zero. I'm going to repeat that. If you feel bad about receiving, not only are you cheating people, the greatest feeling in the world of giving, but you're going to end up at zero. It's a zero sum game. So you got to give more, be given more, receive more, and then show your faith in the omniscient and all powerful of more than enough of everything. Show your faith and ask for more, because then you'll have more than more, and you'll give more than more, be given more than more, receive more than more, and ask for more than more than more. So when I'm 80 years old, unlike my mom and all the wonderful moms out there and the teachers out there and the first responders and our United States veterans and all of the most generous, kindest people that keep giving and do not receive or ask for more, and then they wonder why the most kind and generous people end up with zero. It's simply math, because they're not living in the world of more than enough. They're not giving more, being given more, receiving more, and asking for more than more. These are the values: gratitude, empathy, accountability, and effective communication. These are the practices to know your what, know your who, know your how, know your now, and apply your why. Apply your why from something bigger than you that loves you more than your mom. And I promise you, you will make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun. And you'll join me in my mission to empower over 1 billion people. Be one of the 1,000s like Steve that's going to empower 1,000 to empower 1,000. 1,000 times 1,000, a million times 1,000 to 1 billion. We can create a collective consciousness of abundance together. We can change the world. And it's not some dream. It's a reality. And I'm asking all of you to help me in that mission in reality, because we can do this together. I appreciate the 20 minutes. I have more than enough time to answer questions. Thank you, Steve.
David, thank you so much. That math at the end there, it's actually quite inspiring. The 1,000 to 1,000,000, 1,000,000 to 1 billion piece. I mean, it's practical. And I appreciate the practices that you shared here today and the values. I have two questions. So Synergy, raise your hand and we'll just go through in order here. Ask them about anything. Could be business, could be mindset, could be habits or history or stories or anything like that. I love your mission. I love how you speak. I would love to go back to number two about know your who. And I find that sometimes it can be incredibly challenging, today anyways, to sort through the false facades and to find the people who do have really similar core values and actually sort of walk the talk, and to find people who are most aligned with that core heart that we as individuals have, and to sort of genuinely follow in that sort of like breadcrumb trail that you mentioned about. And so I was just wondering if you could kind of give us some thoughts on, you know, where maybe some questions that, you know, how do you penetrate through some of the false facades and find the people that, that people should really be following and paying attention to, listening to, taking guidance from, learning from, growing with?
Yeah. So look, I have a philosophy about this and some actual, pragmatic ways of doing it. So one, there's an old saying, including at the Napoleon Hill Institute with Think and Grow Rich, Outwitting the Devil, How to Sell Through Life, and being the chairman of that institute, one of them, besides the more you give, the more you receive, that is interesting, is you are the aggregate of the five people that you spend the most time with. Not true. It's just not true. I know tons of moms that spend the majority of their time with a three-year-old, and they are not the aggregate bank account of their three-year-old. They're not the aggregate intelligence. You know, it's bullshit. And so along the lines of finding the who you can help and who can help you, we need to identify different teams that we want to play for and identify the position you want to play for on that team. Do you want to be the owner, the coach, the forward, the center, the guard? Do you want to be the water boy on this team? Do you want to sweep the floors? Whatever it is, I think it's a conscious effort to find different teams according to subject matter and topic expertise that you're looking for when you see within you the skills, knowledge, and desire that you have, knowing and aligning it with the team and the position. And then you're going to maximize the who, because in that team, you're going to be able to facilitate somebody helping you get to where you want to be, as well as you helping someone get to where they want to be by the position that you play on that team, according to subject matter, topic, or expertise. And so within that context, and that's why I created our own private networking group, because I curate it to the subject matter, topics, expertise, billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, entertainers, people who have a common denominator of a desire that they must be what they can be, with an open mind, open heart, and open hands to help one another, and know people to help one another, and not afraid to ask for help. That's the whole basis of this huge, literally thousands of people are in there to help each other. And I create a memorialization, a virtual handshake that says, hey man, I want to remember what the heck you do. And also, if you want to reward me for bringing you business, or I want to reward you, not in a binding way, because time, value, and emotion always changes the minute we come to a binding agreement. So I don't bind anyone. I guarantee everything that I do, because I know time, emotion, and value changes. So I want to give you permission to do two things: change your mind and come up with better terms to help each other, or say no because time, emotion, and value has changed. We don't give permission anymore with the handshake we did. So we're not afraid to change our mind or say no to somebody. Now, on top of that philosophy comes these pragmatic tools. And here is what I have found. Even in the most curated rooms, good people do bad things. Desperate good people do bad things. So we need to take accountability for all of our relationships, knowing our who. Regardless of who recommended them, regardless of what their bio says or their video claims or whatever it may be, especially if you're a social media person, ask Adley. She's one of the titans on one of my TV shows. You know, social media marketing probably has more freaking bullshit than any other place. You got 19-year-old life coaches telling you they know what they're doing. That's a very courageous human being, by the way, to call themselves a 19-year-old life coach. I'm telling you, here's what saves you. One, take accountability for a relationship. Constantly trust everybody. In fact, I'm telling you, trust everybody so much that you're comfortable and confident asking uncomfortable questions, following up in an uncomfortable way. You tell me that your revenue went up 300%. I'm asking you uncomfortable questions because I trust you, not because I don't trust you. Oh, really? How much was that revenue? Can I see your W-2? Can I see your tax return? Can I look and see? Can I talk to that customer? Can I? Because here's what happens if you don't trust everyone in this way. And I think it's the ultimate trust, right? I trust my brother so much, I'll ask him anything. And I'll still be friends with them, and they'll have to answer it. And they'll have to own up to the fact that they oversold me, back-end sold me, miscommunicated to me, lied to me, cheated me, manipulated me, whatever they did to me. But I'm still going to be their brother, and I'm still going to trust them because I take accountability for trust. Because here's what happens. You sit there and listen to somebody, and it's either a miscommunication, a lie, a cheat, a manipulation, an oversell, or a back-end sell. And you know it. You're sitting there talking. You know it. And then shit hits the fan, and you found out you were lied to, cheated, manipulated, oversold, back-end sold, or miscommunicated to. And then you blame the other person, and you ruin the relationship for what you already knew. You were just too afraid to ask for the truth. So we go to blame. You can save yourself everything by telling someone, hey, man, I trust you so much. I need clarification. Can I talk to that person, what you represented? Can I see that paperwork that you represented? Or do you want to repeat yourself so I get a handle on what exactly that means to you? Trust and vet with uncomfortable conversations, uncomfortable questions to get to the accountability that is on you to find the truth, and then stay out of blame, shame, and justification, and materially increase your statistical success of all your interactions. So teams, positions, topic, subject matter, expertise, and then trust and vet.
Brilliant. Thank you, sir. I have one more, and then it's all yours, sure. Yours being synergy. Rebuilding or reinventing yourself. Can you speak to maybe some of that process, the unseen hurdles and challenges, the emotional toll, the regrowth out of it, the ego piece of, you know, fighting history, but wanting to, you know, burn like the phoenix and regrow?
I love it. So I don't believe in, you know, this reinvention idea. I believe in expanding. So by taking inventory of self, my skills, my knowledge of who and what, and my desire. I'm just expanding my skills at all times. I'm expanding my knowledge of who, and I'm expanding my knowledge of what, and hopefully I'm expanding my desire. The reinvention or the pivoting, you know, all of the, you know, latest and greatest words that people use in this meaning are really an expansion aligned with three things. I'm constantly expanding my skills, my knowledge, and my desire according to what's doing well, what's stable, and what I think is going to be doing well. And so if somebody would have asked me when I was running Lee Steinberg Sports Entertainment or working for Samsung or working in the middleware space in the Silicon Valley or working for Legal Research Online, that someday I would have a podcast or be a speaker. That's not a pivot. That wasn't a reinvention. I actually have expanded the exact same skills that I had in law school. The knowledge of who has expanded exponentially. The knowledge of what has expanded exponentially. And I've increased my desire, not by having more desire, not by having more energy. I'm 57 years old, and I invite any one of you to come shadow me for a day. You'll be sleeping in my back seat by 4 o'clock. And some of you are in far better physical condition than I am, far younger and more beautiful than I'll ever be. But the reason is I understand the expansion of desire in the respect that we are all connected to an omniscient, all-powerful source of energy. I know that I interfere with that omniscient, all-powerful energy less than anyone I know. So regardless of what shape you're in, you're interfering with an energy that's far greater than the energy that you have. See, I've shifted the paradigm in my life. I simply know that it's not fear that stops me. It's my reaction to fear that interferes with the omniscient and all-powerful source that makes me a powerful resource. So in the context of energy, shift your paradigm not to get more energy by developing your skills, your knowledge, and your desire, but figure out what you're doing to interfere with your energy, with a need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful, worried. So take that cat that said, I'll take your challenge. Look, you're already illustrating that you have interference that I can help you with, because it wasn't a challenge. It was a lesson to shift the paradigm and perspective in order for you to facilitate the exact same energy that all of us have. None of us have more or less energy than any others. Therefore, there's no comparison and no challenge. It's simply me teaching a lesson. If you travel with me, learn how not to interfere with the energy that we all have together in an infinite, abundant, unified system of thought that is powered with an omniscient and all-powerful source. Regardless of your dogmatic principles, which I am in support of, as long as your dogmatic principles say that we're all one and that there is something bigger than all of us that loves us, protects us, promotes us, perfects us more than our mom, I'm in complete agreement with you. You name yours, I'll name mine.
Wise words. Thank you, sir. Synergy, throw your hand up. I think.
Hi, David.
Drew. I've got a couple questions for you.
AD.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate your time as always. You talk about sleep a lot, you know, when I follow you on social media, and I've really been trying to dial it in. I've got a Whoop and I track, you know, my sleep, and I've been trying to stay consistent on my bedtime and do all the things I think that a lot of people would say lead to good sleep. I've been cutting out alcohol as much as possible. I mean, you know, I'm still a human being and I still have the urges every once in a while to have a drink of wine, glass of wine, but, is there something that you found that was really helpful? I know in a way probably that's like, you know, hiring a sleep coach. But beyond that, is there something that you found that really changed things? I go to bed like 9:30, but I find myself waking up sometimes 4:30 in the morning. And I wish I could just get that extra hour and a half of sleep. Was there something that changed the game for you in the beginning when you were really focusing on this?
Yeah, a couple things. So everybody, sleep is a practice. It's the number one activity that all human beings have. You can't name one other thing that you do that much of your life. It's approximately a third of your life, right? You're approximately going to spend 28 years sleeping. So number one, treat it as such. And the only way to get better at something is to practice it. This is human nature. This is human consciousness. It is the consistent, persistent pursuit or practice of what we want. So The number one thing that'll change everything about your sleep is when you realize sleep's an activity just like driving. It's just we do it longer and it has way more impact on our life to recover, which makes our performance better, and to access information to make life easier, to give us the cheat codes to identify the dis-ease that we're creating in our life for the interference between us and that omniscient, all-powerful, infinite, abundant, unified system. So sleep, number one, is an activity that we need to practice. That changes your mindset of sleep. Now, just like anything else that you're going to practice, you have to warm up when you practice something. And, you know, you if anyone's played golf, you are not as good at golf if you step on the first tee without going to the range and hitting a few. It's just given. So I created an unwinding routine that is the warm up for sleep. And so the idea of warming up for sleep is we want to put ourselves in the best position to sleep, just like we want to put ourselves in the best position to tee off on the first hole, especially on a cold day. So we now have an unwinding routine that says, in order to put myself in the best position to sleep, I need to put myself mentally, spiritually, emotionally, and physically at ease so that I can access this information and get the most recovery. I know my purpose is sleep. And so for me, it's okay to have a glass of wine, but you can't have it too close to your unwinding routine. It needs to be farther out of your system or it's going to interfere with your ease of sleep. So we want the right temperature, right? Learn, you don't need a sleep coach. For me, it's 67 degrees. And I'm one of the few men that was so grateful when his wife hit menopause. Because for the first time in her life, she was overheating all the time. And she's like, turn it down. I'm freaking burning up. I'm like, thank God. 67 degrees. Here we come without complaints. All right. Two, know your pillows, know your blankets, know your bed. Blue light interferes with it. TV, negative conversations. You know, the hardest thing in my unwinding routine was an intimate relationship problem, which is, I don't know why, if you're in an intimate relationship, people love to bring up the most Tabasco latent issues right before you go to bed. How are you going to afford college? We got four kids and you're going to ask me this at 8:59, right? Oh, thank you very much. Or how'd that deal go today? What'd your mom say about not going to Thanksgiving? These are all questions that everybody loves to ask right before we go to sleep. Are you freaking kidding me? Don't allow the housewives or negative TV, movies, scare. We want to put our mind, body, and soul in a position of recovery and access and know that behaviorally that sleep's the most important activity that you're going to have in your life. And if you're good at sleep, the rest of life becomes easier. And so temperature, light, sound, the pillows, the blankets, all for you, whatever puts you at ease, and do reverse time. You know, for me, I need a minimum of 7 hours. So I unwind at 9. I'm usually physically, mentally, and emotionally out, deep into sleep by 9:05. And I wake up at 4. But if you want to wake up at 6 and you want to get 8 hours, reverse it back. Make sure that you're in deep sleep by 8 hours previous to that and unwind yourself. Hopefully I didn't go too far, but that's really important to me.
Yeah, and I appreciate all that for sure. I'll have one more follow-up question, just not necessarily related, but you said something earlier about find the people in your world that you want to aspire to be. And I loved what you said about the five people around you. Thank you for saying that, because I think that's kind of bullshit too. You're the first person I've ever heard say that's kind of debunked it. So thank you for that. And I think the second thing was you said, find somebody who's in that position that you aspire to be. I think one of the biggest things, and I think maybe it's a Canadian thing that we struggle with, is we're always kind of, you know, sitting there saying, well, I don't want to bother that person. They're probably busy. They're probably doing what they're doing and they're successful at what they do and they don't really need to help me. Why would I reach out to them? Why would they help me in that situation? Could you have any advice for just, I guess, taking those first steps towards connecting with someone who you really admire and you want to be in their shoes?
Well, one, know how good they feel when they help you. Two, know how they got to where they wanted to be and know that they appreciate that. So the worst thing they can say is, you know, I'm busy you're not giving them an opportunity, you're cheating them. And so, you know, most people to get to where they want to be or better have buckets of how they help people. It drives me nuts. You know, I have a long wait list for my one-on-one coaching. That's part of the reason too I created this group, so I can help people and make myself accessible. So I'm very active and accessible, but people who pay me a ton for one-on-one coaching, I love when they're like, I was like, why didn't you call me? I'm on call. You're paying me to be on call. Oh, didn't want to bother you. Oh, that's a great business model. I should double the amount of people that I can coach because you're paying me to help you and you're afraid to ask me for help. I can probably take 1,000 clients like that. So anybody who wants to pay me to help and it's too afraid to ask for help or think you're bothering me, please send me your credit card. I will charge you every month for not bothering me and helping you in that manner. Think about how stupid this is. Come on. So ask the people. Remember, you know, some people will say no, but, you know, it's the one that says yes that saves you so much. I asked Mr. Nguyen when I lost everything. I didn't know Mr. Nguyen that well. I literally went up to him at a gala, purposely went to the gala because he was there. And I said, Mr. Nguyen, my name's Dave Meltzer. I run the most notable sports agency in the world. I just lost over $100 million. I'm bankrupt. I actually lost my mom's house. I have a horrible relationship with money. I can make money. I've always made money. I made $1 million 9 months out of law school, made over $100 million, and I'm going to make it back. But my relationship with money sucks shit. Can you help me? And he looked at me and he's like, David, here's my cell phone. I said, sir, I will be discreet and fast, but this may be the most valuable cell phone I've ever gotten. So I will call you, leave you a message if you're not available. And I promise you within 3 minutes or less, I will have my question for you to help me with my relationship with money. We became friends. We got our own relationship because of that. And he helped my relationship with money. And he made an introduction right away to someone that made me my first $2 million out of bankruptcy because of who he knew. So, you know, and I'll tell you, there's been people that have said no to me or blew me off. You know, I have a 3-no rule. So some people are too afraid to say no. So they'll say, call me Friday. I call Friday. They don't answer. Call me Monday. I call Monday. They don't answer. On the third time, look, I tell people, hey, this obviously isn't the right time. When it is, let me know. 50% of the people call me back faster because they do want to help me. It's just a matter of circumstance. And then 50% of the people I never hear from again, but they don't think I'm bothering them and I don't have to waste my time chasing somebody that I didn't give permission to say no to me.
I appreciate all that. Thanks, David.
Call me anytime. Awesome.
That was incredible. Amazing. Angie, you're up and I think we probably have time for another couple.
Yeah.
Let's give her.
Thanks. Time and wisdom, David. Appreciate that. In your first point, you started off by saying people don't know what they want. How would you recommend to get clarity around that?
Take it in 4 buckets and utilize the circumstances of each day and then assign time according to the buckets and the circumstances of the day. One of the ways, obviously, is to have non-negotiable behavior. So do you want to live a long time? Then why don't you give a minimum amount of time to sleep and health? That's going to cover a lot. You want to have a good family life and friends? Give a minimum amount of time to that. You want to have good finances? Check your balances every day. Don't ignore your balances. You want to have faith? Study God or who you believe in every day, minimum. I have 3 daughters and a son. My daughters are 25, 23, and 20. I spend a minimum of 2 minutes a day with my daughters. Minimum, 2 minutes every day, 7 days a week. I asked for 5. They're far better negotiators than me. They said 2. But that 2 minutes a day is worth so much because that's what's most important to me. That's what I want. Same thing with utilizing my time. So I study time, utilizing relativity to my favor. So I study relativity of association of also the feeding and bleeding aspect of how much feeding am I getting from the bleeding and feeding of every relationship. Notice that's different than feed those that feed you. I say feed those that you get the most from, whether they're bleeding or feeding you. My kids bleed the shit out of me. I have an 81 turning 82 year old mom, bleeds the shit out of me. not as bad as I bled her, but I get fed so much by them bleeding me. You see the nuance of that? So once you get the non-negotiables, now it's all circumstantial. I just say, okay, according to the weather, the interest rates, what's doing well, what I feel like doing, I'm going to prioritize today in the direction of where I think I want to be in the future. And then I take the meaning of the past. I search for the lessons of the failures, mistakes, setbacks, successes, defining moments, historical relevances, and I align them to make sure I don't limit myself with some meaning that's going to stop me from a higher or bigger self-image. And so knowing my what personally, experientially, according to circumstances, giving wise, how much can I produce, and receiving wise. And those are the four subcategories that I give to circumstantial behavior for negotiable behavior that is circumstantial, and aligning the meaning of my past with it in order to effectuate a greater future aligned with a direction, not an outcome. I'm out of the mode, I'll be happy when. Be happy when I get married. I'll be when I have kids. I'll be happy when I pay my law loans. I'll be happy when the sun comes out. I'll be bullshit. I'm happy. I told my friend Chris Gardner, he wrote the book Pursuit of Happiness, did the movie with Will Smith, Pursuit of Happiness. It's not the pursuit of happiness. Happiness is the pursuit. It's bioanatomically and biochemically proven that when you're pursuing your potential, you get dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. And when you reach an outcome, that doesn't occur. It's over. So pursue these things negotiably and non-negotiably. Thank you.
Well said. Thank you again. And she was giving you some hearts there. I have more questions. I'm happy to ask David, but anybody else want to unmute? And
I scare people now.
He just speaks so well. Colin, go for it.
It's like great information. I personally do not follow you. My wife does. And she talked about you today because I'm too busy to, and you know, better myself in certain aspects, which is something that I'm really trying to work on. But she showed me this reel of you talking about the four things. Like you call your mother every day and you say, I'm happy, I'm healthy, I love you, and I appreciate you. So me, like many people, the relationship with money, with friendships, love, all of these things being pushed down on us from our parents and family members. Obviously, I just have some issues I've still been working through with my mom. And I really resonated with what you said. And I just wanted to know, like, I thought about it, me, if somebody called me every day and just said those things and that was it, I would look forward to that call. It would make me feel incredibly powerful, appreciated, loved. And I just wanted to ask you, how did you start that? And is it a simple, hey, mom, you rattled off and you're off? Or do you say it with empathy? Like, does it lead to a deeper conversation? And how is your relationship better for it?
Well, first, it varies. It varies on the circumstances of the day, but I make sure that I do it every day. Sometimes I do it and then my mom starts complaining to me. And so I make up that I'm going to got another phone call and I got to leave. Sometimes she starts a really intriguing conversation in a very positive direction, and I stay with it longer. And that's why, you know, at minimum, that's what I do. How I came about, it's really interesting. So my mom always made me feel great. She's like probably thought way too highly of me, but it gave me self-confidence. Still probably does. My dad never said three things to me. Never told me he loved me, never told me he was proud of me, never told me he had my back. Every day, I tell my four children in the minimum of time that I spend with them that I'm proud of them, I love them, and I got your back. I became a parent and they don't, you know, they roll their eyes at me, they scoff at me, they make fun of me, and I'm okay with that because I know I'm planting seeds under a tree that I may never sit under, but it's growing with empowerment. They carry it with me. But I asked myself, I said, what is it I want them to say back? Instead of rolling their eyes and making fun of me and scoff, oh yeah, dad, I know you love me. You're proud of me. I know, right? Especially my 14-year-old. He's at that age, right? It's like he barely looks at me and I grab his chin. I'm like, no, look at me. And I said to myself, what do I want him to say back to me? And you know what it was? I just want him to be happy, healthy, tell me he loves me and appreciates me. That's it. I don't have to have him prove it. My mom used to make me like drive down to her home and fix a screen door. I'm not a handyman. I'm very wealthy. I can afford to pay a handyman to go there, but she would require me to drive an hour, do a shitty job fixing her screen door, and hang out and drive home an hour. Why? Because she wanted to know that I'm happy, healthy, love, and appreciate her. Why not just say it? Saves me a ton of time and makes her feel great. That's probably my best piece of advice, by the way. Call your mom or your dad.
I think you have half of the group here with a tear in the eye.
I could barely get through it without crying myself, so thank you.
Saw that. Thank you for just being real, man, all through this conversation.
I got a question.
Yo, Adrian.
Love it, Dave. I appreciate the info. I think a lot of the stuff I'm taking away is all about relationships. And I think you talk about the balances. How do you balance the personal relationships and carving out the time for that, but also effectively building and maintaining kind of those high value business relationships as well?
So first of all, I like the word harmony, because harmony takes into context the circumstances of today. Balance is very mathematical, unrealistic, does not take into consideration circumstances of the day. So if I want to harmonize my personal experiential giving and receiving, harmonize the activity I get paid for, not paid for, planned or unplanned, negotiable or non-negotiable, I want to harmonize that with my day. And so I think it's really important to think within the context of harmony, not balance. And then because I know, I find certainty within me, I'm constantly looking at the meaning inside of me aligned with where I want to be. And then I utilize the only certainty outside of me, which is time. So according to those circumstances, according to the harmony of the circumstances in the day, personally, professionally, planned, unplanned, paid for, unpaid for, negotiable, non-negotiable, according to those circumstances, how much time am I going to allow for me to pay attention and give intention, do, say, think, feel, and believe, aligned with where I want to be or better. And so the mathematical equation in this harmonious behavior, according to the circumstances each day, between negotiable and non-negotiable, paid and unpaid, the planned and unplanned, et cetera, it is simply the ability to prioritize my attention and intention by time. Because what I pay attention to and what I give intention to, what I think, say, do, feel, and believe aligned with where I want to be or better will equal what? The coincidences in my life, the coinciding of the universe, the consequences, results, the outcomes that I desire or better. Because I have faith beyond the wisdom of seeking lessons out of everything that I do. I have faith when evidence is not there proving I'm going to get to where I want to be or better. I have so much faith that when the evidence is contrary to where I want to be or better, like losing over $100 million, including your mom's house, I had faith, regardless of that evidence that says you are a loser, you have effed up your life. All this evidence was contrary to me changing the world and making billions of dollars and empowering billions of people. It was contrary. It wasn't just no evidence. It was like, dude, you suck. I had faith that I was going to be protected, promoted, loved, and perfected, that this is what was going to get me to where I wanted to be or better, not stop me from it. And that together harmoniously allows me to enjoy what I don't like or don't love, enjoy what other people don't like or don't love, enjoy the consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit pursuit of my potential. It gives me the cheat codes. It let me understand and raises my awareness to what's dis-easy in my life. So I get the cheat code, so it's easy. And that's what we want, to be at ease, so that we utilize all of that omniscient, all-knowing power that we are part of.
Beautifully said again. Everybody, David Meltzer.
Thank you.
We do happy hands often, right?
So yeah, right on. Reach out to me. I put my email in there. It's david@dmeltzer.com. Like I said, I will sign a book, send it to you, pay for shipping in a book. I have a great network of people that I would love for all of you to be part of, to help each other and know people. I free Friday trainings every Friday. I do VIP dinners, meetups, holding courts around the country. I'm going to be in San Francisco, Chicago. I have offices at SoFi Stadium, at the Wynn. Come by in person, on the phone, email, media. Please join our neighborhood. It's a higher frequency. It will accelerate where you want to be or better. Steve, thanks for the opportunity to be a part of your community.
The pleasure is truly all mine. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing the wisdom, the inspiration, the connection, your heart here. And you've got a lot of supporters in your back corner here. And thank you for being a great human.
We'll do it soon. Thank you, everyone. Have a great week.
Cheers.
Cheers.